This is Mayo Clinic Radio.
From the Mayo Clinic, Rochester, Minnesota campus, I'm Dr. Tom Shives.
And I'm Tracy McCray.
And this is Mayo Clinic Radio, the weekly program that brings you the latest developments in health and medicine from Mayo Clinic.
Today on Mayo Clinic Radio, influenza in the U.S. has reached epidemic levels in more than 40 states. Is it too late to take steps to protect yourself and your family?
So if you're asking the question, is this a cold or is this flu? It's probably a cold, but it's tough to know at the time. Most healthy people will do just fine with plenty of fluid and plenty of rest.
Mayo Clinic infectious disease specialist Dr. Pratish Tosh joins us to talk about the current flu season, why it's so much worse than last year, and how you may still be able to avoid getting it.
And later on Mayo Clinic Radio, we'll hear from the editor-in-chief of the Mayo Clinic Diet on how you can stay on track with your weight loss plan that you started at the beginning of the new year. We're back right after this. This is Mayo Clinic Radio.
Dr. Pratish Tosh, welcome back to the program. Nice to have you.
Oh, thanks for having me.
The first topic that we want to talk about is the influenza this year. It's been a brutal season, hasn't it? And why? Why so different than last year?
Yeah, well, every different season seems to have its own peculiarities. And some seasons are starting earlier, or some start later, and some are more severe than others. This one particular seems to have started earlier and seems to be more severe, at least in comparison to the last few years.
And we have to talk about the vaccine, because that's part of the, oh, don't shake your head at me. I know the vaccine, you know, in past years you always hear, oh, the vaccine was a good match. You know, it's 80%, it's 75%, it's 92%. And we're all like, yay. Right. This year it wasn't such a good match.
So there's a lot that goes into that. And the severity of an influenza epidemic relates to a few things. One is related to the virus itself. In this year, the H3N2 virus, this particular strain, seems to have been fairly aggressive, even compared to different H3N2 strains that we've had in the past. So there's the virus itself, but then there's also the population immunity, and part of that is related to vaccines, and the other part is related to prior exposure. And so what we understand about the vaccines is the better that we are able to predict the strain that's going to be circulating and make that as part of the vaccine, from what we understand of how the vaccine works, that should help with the protection. And I say that that's how it should work, and that the data to say that good match years are better than bad match years, it's really not as well proven as we'd like.
Okay.
But just from what we understand about how the vaccine works, the better the match, really the vaccine should be working better, but it's tough to prove that.
It's guesswork, right?
It's not really guesswork. You're not just flipping a coin, Tom.
But it was decided a while ago, isn't it? About a year ago, 9 months ago, you do your best guesswork with the information that you have.
We would call it surveillance.
Forecast.
Educated, you know, based on surveillance data. And yes, part of it is that it takes a while to grow the viruses that we're going to be using in the vaccine. So it takes months. And so you have to do your best, say, using surveillance, appropriate analysis of your surveillance data, which you would call guessing.
Sure.
But I would say it takes a sort of a master hand to say what is, you know, based on what you're seeing, what is likely to be showing up in the fall. And usually we're very good at that.
Very good.
And yeah.
We've had quite a few deaths caused by the flu. I think a little over 600 in the last month of 2014. 21 children have died of flu this season. Now, most people who die of the flu have some underlying condition or disease, don't they? I mean, it's very rare for a truly healthy person to die of influenza.
That's absolutely correct. And, you know, a lot of the death data is sort of, we do looking back on the year. And so we usually don't know until much after the influenza season. But in general, each influenza season will have about tens of thousands of deaths in the United States from every flu season. But you're right. You know, most of the people who die who are going to be older people and people with chronic medical problems or bad immune systems to begin with, as well as sort of the very young. And those are the people who are at highest risk of complications.
What about the symptoms? How do you know if you have the flu? And if you do have it, should you go see your doctor and find out definitively?
So that's an intriguing question. And so about 2.5 weeks ago, I actually came down with influenza. And
you did?
I did. Yeah.
After he saw us the last time he was in.
You survived it. So that's good.
I did okay. You know, at first I was afraid I was going to die.
It feels
and then
like
I was afraid that I wasn't going to die. And that's really, you know, speaks to how severe it is. And in general, it tends to be very severe. So if you're asking the question, is this a cold or is this flu? It's probably a cold. Mm-hmm. But it's tough to know at the time. So in terms of when should somebody see a doctor, when it comes to the previous point you were saying, that most healthy people will do just fine, you know, with plenty of fluid and plenty of rest. And that is, in fact, what I did as a healthy young adult. Maybe I'm older adult.
You laid low. Good for you.
You know, I stayed at home, you know, did just drank plenty of fluids, you know, slept, and I would actually not need antiviral medications. But the people who might need antiviral medications and should see a doctor, people, first of all, who are having very severe symptoms, but also those people we alluded to earlier, who are older age, have medical problems, or are very young, they should seek medical care because we do have antivirals.
Just one, isn't there? Tamiflu is at least the one we've only heard about.
That's the one that is used most, and it's very effective. There's also, so Tamiflu is also Tamivir, would be the generic name. There's also Zanamivir, which is a sort of an inhaled one, and then another one, Paramivir, which is IV, which just came out. But yeah, the one that's used most is Tamiflu, which I would call it also Tamiflu.
But you say it's very effective. I haven't heard that to be the case. I thought it was somewhat controversial whether or not it ought to be given, who it ought to be given to. And in fact, it'll only shorten the duration of the disease by a day or maybe two.
So, you know, there's a lot of controversy. And if I said very effective, I should say probably really good thing to do.
And we should say, as terrible as you felt, limiting it by a day or two might not be the worst thing ever.
Right. And at Mayo, sure. I was involved in writing the protocols and how you right. test and treat for influenza. And I knew that as a sort of healthy adult, I would not fall under the category of people who should get it. So I didn't do anything about it. I sort of took my own advice. But with regard to the antiviral, we really don't want to use it in people who are healthy, because the more antivirals we use, it leads to antiviral resistance. It makes it harder to use and potentially harder to use in people who really need it.
One other question. I've heard that viruses love dry air. And so is it important to keep your house humidified? And am I right about that?
Yeah, it's tough to know what there's a lot of things that go into why certain viruses come out in certain times of year, whether it's, you know, crowding or humidity or temperature. There's a lot of things that go into it. My general thought is, if it makes you comfortable to live in a humidified air or dry air or whichever it is, go with what makes you comfortable.
All right, 15 seconds left. Wash your hands would be one way to help prevent the flu. What else?
Get your vaccine, even if you have not already gotten the vaccine. And if you do get sick, if you are at high risk, see a doctor. And also, when you have influenza, don't go to work, don't go to school.
Stay home, rest, chicken soup, and water.
Okay, that's the flu. We got that covered. But when we come back, we have to talk about the mumps and the whooping cough and why those are hanging around. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Mayo Clinic Radio. Dr. Tom Shives, along with Tracy McCray, and this week's guest, infectious disease specialist, Dr. Pratish Tosh. So, Dr. Tosh, the next topic we want to talk about is mumps. And yes. Believe it or not, we're talking about mumps. I thought nobody got the mumps anymore. But there have been a number of National Hockey League players, from the Pittsburgh Penguins, the St. Louis Blues.
Minnesota Wild had their fair share.
Who have been infected recently. Why? Why has mumps come back on the scene, and how do these guys get it?
Yeah, mumps is a disease that we thought we had not necessarily eradicated.
Right.
But really, it's a previously childhood illnesses that, with vaccination, we were able to really reduce the numbers. Unfortunately, the vaccination rates in the United States have decreased.
And why?
There's a lot of things that go into this, and people are not, say, choosing to vaccinate their children, and there's a lot of issues, sort of, let's say, bad advice and bad science that sort of led to this revolution where people are, say, not vaccinating their children. Concerns about autism and things like that, which have not turned out to actually be correlated. So even though the autism rates keep going up and are unrelated to the vaccine, the rate of vaccination in certain parts of the country have been decreasing. Which is
There's
really
no evidence that vaccinating your children might lead to autism.
That's
correct?
Right. That's right.
I kind of assumed, though, that these guys, they're in their 20s. They're probably from other countries,
right,
that maybe they just weren't vaccinated where they're from, or they have substandard vaccination. We've got great vaccination here. Yeah. Is it a combination or none of those?
So it may be none of those.
Okay.
In that we know now we're seeing outbreaks within communities that have been vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, two shots are recommended. But the vaccine, it will say, is 90% effective. And if you have the entire country vaccinated, which we once did, that is enough to give that population immunity. So that if the virus were to come in from overseas or something like that, then you really the outbreaks would be self-contained. But we really have started dropping in our vaccine coverage. Mm. And so what you'll see are these pockets of outbreak, and some of it is in previously vaccinated people.
So in other words, the vaccination doesn't necessarily protect you for life. So most of these players had been vaccinated.
Yeah,
do you
need a booster of mumps?
Well, you
vaccine?
Do need a booster,
okay.
as now that we're recommending, and part of it is it used to be one shot, but now we're recommending two shots for kids.
When you're a kid.
Right. And then now recommending it for people before they enter college, sort of a booster. But, it's not just does it last long enough. And the vaccine itself is, we'll say, 90% effective.
Mm-hmm.
So that leaves 10% of the people who are really relying on it working 90% of the time and everybody else.
Right.
Right? And so part of this is we're not vaccinating enough. The other part is, we need a better vaccine.
And is there research being done toward that point?
There's always a lot of research going on in vaccine development. In mumps, because the vaccine was, pretty good.
Sure.
Right? And really helpful for a long time. We that has been working and that's been going on, and so maybe not the highest priority.
What does mumps do actually? I just know from cartoons that you had a person with a big old swollen face. Is that what mumps does to someone?
Well, it causes people to feel pretty bad.
That's too bad.
But we've lost sort of our community memory of what these vaccine preventable diseases can do.
A whole generation didn't have to worry about it.
That's right. And it used to be the among the top, if not the top, cause of deafness in children. Mm-hmm. And we forget about that.
Mm-hmm.
It can cause sterility. Mm-hmm. Really a lot of problems. Most people, however, will get sick and have their swollen glands and get better. But there's all those sort of complications.
Is it treated with antibiotics?
Unfortunately, no.
Oh, okay.
There's really no antivirals or anything. Mm. Supportive care, but the big thing is trying to stop these outbreaks when they happen. Really, give booster vaccines to everybody around them, but that doesn't help the people who've gotten it.
Right,
it's really a lot of rest. And these are hockey players; these guys are tough, but some of them are really knocked out for a while.
Right.
And how did it spread? I had heard there was some evidence that the sharing water bottles might have helped spread the mumps.
Well, there's a lot of things, and this is. It's classically happening in close contact. It's spread by usually respiratory droplets or contact or sharing towels.
Cough, if you cough in a locker room, it could spread.
And these are people who are very close to each other a lot.
Too close.
Right.
Sometimes.
And so that means sort of the perfect situation for something like mumps to spread.
Now, we were talking about, you used the word outbreak, a mumps outbreak, and recently we've used the word outbreak to describe whooping cough, because whooping cough is starting to come back the last couple of seasons. First of all, I guess maybe I shouldn't say it like that, that we have a flu season. Is there a whooping cough season, or does it just kind of, the outbreaks come and go?
There does seem to be some, we call periodicity to it, but the big thing is that we actually were able to get very good control of whooping cough for a long time with the previous vaccine,
mm-hmm.
and for a number of reasons, in the last few years, we've been seeing more and more whooping cough, and including deaths among young infants.
And again, that's because of children not being vaccinated?
It is a combination of matters. One is we've lost, we decreased vaccination in general, and we're recommending booster vaccination and actually vaccination of pregnant women during every pregnancy, so that they give antibodies to the child during the time that they're most susceptible. And part of it is, we need to be vaccinating more. But the other part is we actually had a different vaccine initially,
mm-hmm.
and then went, but it caused sort of a lot of problems for people who were vaccinated at the times, arm pain and things like that. So we went for a kind of a cleaner vaccine, but that had fewer parts of the bacteria. And some of that, some of the decreased efficacy of the vaccine might be related to the actual change
because
in the vaccine.
People were being instructed to get a booster for their whooping cough. I mean, I do know teenagers and 20-somethings that were having to get boosters. Am I supposed to be getting a booster for my whooping cough?
I think he has.
Wishes.
Sorry, no, I'm
did
fine.
Did you get your booster?
I did. All healthcare workers need to get their
it's probably
booster.
A little holdover from the flu, huh?
You know, it was. So yeah, I got 2 weeks ago. Now every time I talk, I keep coughing.
Right.
But that has actually gotten better. But in terms of the whooping cough and who should get boosters, we are recommending every adult get at least a one-time booster, and certainly every healthcare worker. And the other thing is, you know, there's getting whooping cough, but then there's dying from whooping cough.
Sure.
And the people that are highest risk are those neonates.
Well, the whooping cough has been kind of anecdotal over the last couple of years because these pockets of it spring up in areas where the immunization rates are down. And, you know, it kind of, like you just did, kind of makes you nod your head and smile and go, people need to take a look at that.
It is a combination of those factors. Right. The big thing is we have to use the vaccines that we have now.
So you're talking about the DPT vaccine, and it just brought a question to my mind. We've seen a resurgence of pertussis, which is whooping cough. Tetanus, obviously not, unless because people are getting that. But what about diphtheria? Have we ever seen any cases of diphtheria
recently? There are occasional cases that you'll
see.
Are
there really?
They're almost all imported from other parts of the world. But the DPT vaccine, which is sort of the original, but now the one that we're giving to adults is Tdap, which is sort of acellular pertussis.
All right. So right before Christmas, we had the NHL players getting mumps, and then Angelina Jolie had to miss the premiere of her movie because she had the chicken pox.
Right.
So it was the story was mumps and chicken pox, adults with children's diseases. Is chicken pox just kind of comes and goes? I mean, doesn't it? It seems like people are getting their immunization for a chicken pox now, and an adult getting it is probably more par for the course than a child getting it.
You know, that's it's another one of those things about we're very successful with these vaccines, and we're not seeing these previously very common childhood illnesses because the vaccine has been so good. Now, we do know that people who develop chicken pox later in life tend to have more severe illness, which is why it's really important that we vaccinate them as children.
Mm-hmm. Chickenpox just a nuisance, or can it be a serious disease also?
That's another thing that we've forgotten how bad it can be. It can cause all kinds of problems, leading to hospitalization and sort of even cause meningitis or encephalitis, so infection of the brain itself or the area around the brain, pneumonia, these sort of things. And actually be very severe and actually cause death.
You know, as long as you're here, how about an Ebola update? Are you as concerned about this becoming an epidemic or a pandemic as you were, say, a month ago?
Well, a month ago, I was also not concerned it would be a global issue, especially in places that have good public health infrastructure. Now, right now, we seem to be winning the battle, or things would be better in Liberia as well as Guinea, although it seems to continue to rage in Sierra Leone.
Is that because they are becoming better structured for their health care, or is it just because it's running the course and it's we'll have to wait till the next time to have better structured health care in those countries?
Well, I think a lot of the issue is we've actually had more boots on the ground. We're able to man these Ebola treatment centers and things like that, and do the contact tracing, sort of the regular epidemiologic things that you do to stop these outbreaks.
It's actually been, several weeks since we've seen a case of Ebola in the United States, correct?
It's been a long time since we've had one that was identified in the United States. Now, of course, there are some people who are being brought in from overseas who've been exposed.
All right, Dr. Pratish Tosh, thanks again for being with us. Infectious disease specialist, Mayo Clinic, Rochester. Always good to have you on the program.
Thanks so much.
Coming up, we'll talk about this week's health and medical news and then the Healthy Living Center at Mayo Clinic. We're back right after this.
Hi, I'm Vivian Williams with headlines from the Mayo Clinic News Network. It makes sense that people who are satisfied in life enjoy it more. Well, research shows they may also have better bone health. Research from the University of Eastern Finland shows women ages 60 to 70 who are satisfied with their lives have a higher bone density and they suffer from osteoporosis less frequently than their unsatisfied peers. Osteoporosis is common and can lead to bone fractures. People lose bone density as they age, and menopause is a major risk factor. Other risk factors factors include being sedentary, smoking, not getting enough calcium and vitamin D, some medications, and some medical conditions. And the long-term stress associated with depression may contribute to osteoporosis because depression might make you want to smoke or not exercise. Now, the researchers found satisfaction in life not only improves your sense of well-being, but it may also improve bone health. And this was published in the journal Psychosomatic Medicine. And now let's talk about an issue that you might think isn't supposed to happen to adults, but it does: acne. Well, yes, adults can get it too. No matter how old you are, acne happens. Here's Mayo Clinic dermatologist Dr. Mark Davis.
We see people who had never had problems with acne in their adolescence, but developing it in their 20s and 30s and 40s. We use all the same things that you use for adolescent acne. So we use topical treatments and then oral treatments if the topicals don't work by themselves.
Dr. Davis says start with over-the-counter topical products that have benzoyl peroxide in them. Your doctor can also prescribe topical retinoids. For tougher cases, there are prescription oral contraceptives, antibiotics, and medications called spironolactone and isotretinoin. Some meds can cause serious side effects, so be sure to talk it over with your doctor. And now here's some info about chronic pain. The National Institutes of Health says an estimated 100 million Americans live with it. A new report by an NIH independent panel found a need for a new approach to pain treatment that incorporates patients' perspective and desired outcomes while also avoiding potential harms. They say not enough clinical research is out there to show physicians how to best treat chronic pain in adults. Opioids are often used to treat it, but the panel says there are no assessment and treatment guidelines. Are opioids the right treatment? If so, how much? Or are there other things we could do? They say those types of questions need research to find the right answers, finding ways to help treat chronic and often debilitating pain. And that's a look at headlines from the Mayo Clinic News Network. I'm Vivian Williams.
Welcome back to Mayo Clinic Radio. Dr. Tom Shives along with Tracy McRae. And our guest this segment is Dr. Donald Hensrud. Dr. Hensrud, welcome back to the program. Always good to have you with us.
Happy to be back, Tom.
You are a preventive medicine specialist is what you do at Mayo. And that means you keep people from getting sick? Is that what you do?
We're trying to keep people from coming to see people like you and me and prevention. But seriously, people don't realize how powerful the link is between lifestyle habits such as diet, stress management, and physical activity, and how powerful that can affect their long-term health.
It's the most important factor with regard to how healthy you are, isn't it? How you live your life, lifestyle.
You're right. Genetics kind of set the stage, and I'll describe this as a card game, a draw poker. Genetics is the cards you're dealt. How you play them are your lifestyle habits, and you can really improve on that hand if you play your cards right.
Lifestyle changes and prevention are key.
Absolutely.
All right.
One thing I like to talk about is, you know, if people think about preventing a disease they may not get for 40 years, that's not a strong motivator. But prevention can also influence the quality of life. An example is many people say, when I was more active, when I was eating better, when I weighed a little less, I felt better. That should be motivation, too. It can really improve the quality of your life.
And because we're talking about this right after the first of the year, if people need a little help to maybe pull their resolution back into focus, what would you say here at the Healthy Living Program?
Well, it's classic for people to have broad goals. Too broad in many cases.
Yeah, I need to lose 20 pounds.
In 2 days.
Right.
It just isn't going to happen. And so starting out with reasonable goals is the first step. And think about short-term goals. Not just I want to lose 50 pounds, but how are you going to take those baby steps first and then maintain them? So reasonable goals. The second thing is a realistic plan, not something that start out exercising an hour a day every day of the week. If you haven't been exercising, start out slow, be specific about it, and make it practical and enjoyable. And finally, real support. That's the third R. Reasonable goals, realistic plan, and real support from friends, family, and professionals who can help you with that plan.
I was just thinking that if people's goal is, I want to lose 20 pounds or I want to lose 50 pounds, it's kind of the wrong way to look at it. What it should be is, I want to make some changes so that I can lose 20 pounds.
You're exactly right. One analogy I use is in the financial business. You don't say, I want to make $1 million and just go out and do it. You have to have a good financial plan to reach that outcome goal.
What are some other habits that we should acquire in the
new year? One thing that's underestimated for some people is sleep. We're all busy. We're all, you know, go, go, go. And
stress,
yep. And sleep can be a casualty in this. And so people underestimate that getting a good night's sleep can make a difference in their health too.
As a preventive medicine specialist, if you try to put it in its simplest terms, and see if you would agree with this, you really need to get your blood glucose checked. Because if you have diabetes or your blood sugar is high, you need to keep that under control. The second thing you need to do is get a colonoscopy, because there's a disease, the only one of two, cervical cancer being the other, that is actually preventable. The third thing I would say is if you're a woman, you need to get periodic mammograms. And if you're a male, you need to get a digital rectal exam and maybe a PSA, although that's a little bit controversial. But isn't that the easiest way to look at it?
I think that's
down?
Really good. You might add a blood pressure to that.
Absolutely.
And yeah. I think that's a pretty good list to start with. It gets down to the basics.
It's like you've learned a thing or two over the years doing this show, Tom Shives. We need to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the Healthy Living Program and with our guest, Dr. Hinsrud, and a chef. You know, I had to book a chef to bring it, and so we have an executive chef who's going to join us. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Mayo Clinic Radio. We are with Dr. Donald Hinsrud, who is a preventive medicine specialist and also the editor-in-chief of the New York Times best-selling Mayo Clinic Diet Book. Dr. Hinsrud, tell us about the book. I know it's received multiple awards in the past and just a new one recently.
For the past few years, we've been named to one of the top diets in the country by U.S. News & World Report. They just came out with their 2015 list, and we were pleased and happy to be on the list there. We've been around for a few years, and we did that intentionally. Dietary programs should be evolutionary and not revolutionary. And if you look at the different books and programs out there, many of them are a flash in the pan. They promise quick weight loss and you know, you can eat all of this that you want and you're going to lose weight. We took a long-term view, and we have not only food that's healthy, it tastes good, and people can have a very rewarding lifestyle making this type of food.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not very sexy. There's not a lot of gimmicks that go along with it.
But boy, does it taste good.
It really tastes good. It's very common sense.
You know, it's not a diet. It's a lifestyle change.
You're exactly right, Tom. We did choose that title because that's where people look for advice with diet books, but it is a lifestyle change. We understand people want to lose weight. They want to lose weight quickly. So it's divided up into two phases. Phase one, lose it. People can lose weight quickly, but it's the healthiest way to lose weight quickly there is. Because if people make changes in their habits relatively suddenly, healthy changes, they can lose weight and they can feel better relatively quickly.
You know, speaking of tasting good, shortly we're going to be talking with executive chef Jen Welpert. I think she's going to share a recipe or two with us.
Well, she is, because we have not mentioned we are sitting smack dab in the middle of the beautiful kitchen here, the practice kitchen at the Healthy Living Program.
It smells good in here, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
She's coming up with something for us pretty soon. So how about the success, people who have tried this? What do you hear from people who have purchased the Mayo Clinic Diet Book and how successful they've been? You must get some feedback.
Well, we do. And people are surprised sometimes that they can eat nothing's off limits. There's a lot of food there. And they can enjoy themselves. And once they learn some of the tricks, you know, sometimes people are so caught in their own habits or they're eating processed food and food that out of a can or a box all the time. They've lost some of the skill of making things. And Chef Jen is going to show us in a minute and talk about how we can do that and put that in our own lives. It also is key to be practical and enjoyable. We don't have time to spend all night in the kitchen, but with some tips and hints, we can make it part of our lifestyle.
I have a myth or fact for you. Myth or fact, it doesn't matter how I lose the weight, just as long as I lose it.
Well, if people lower their calories by just eating jelly beans, they'll lose weight. But that isn't the healthiest way to do it. So we think it's possible both to lose weight and do it in a health-supportive way.
Here's another one. When I shop for groceries, it's best to stick to the periphery or outer portions of the store because that's where the healthiest foods are found.
And that's
a matter of fact.
That's a fact.
Is it really?
It really is. Yeah, that's the way they design these things. So if you can stick to the periphery around the outside, you're better off. You make a few detours on the inside to get some things, but that's where they usually put the vegetables and some of the healthier produce.
Stay out of the middle of the store.
I have another question for you. You touched about a little bit ago, but it has to do with the stress aspect of it. That's something that happens here at the Healthy Living Program. People do learn how to deal with stress a little bit better. And of course, if you are less stressed, you're probably a little more likely to eat more healthfully. So I can see how it goes hand in hand. But how do you address the stress part of it for people?
Well, we emphasize, obviously, physical activity, nutrition, and resiliency is our term that we've coined for the stress management area. There are different ways, and one of the things we do in our program is individualize it. Mm-hmm. For some people, it may be more meditation. For other people, it may be more listening to music or relaxation. Physical activity can relieve stress for some people. So we try and individualize it. We give people new ideas and expose them to things, and they can try it out and incorporate it in their lifestyle.
The book itself, I think that there's a journal that goes along with it. Have people found that to be helpful? You have the diet book, and then you keep a journal that helps you track your progress?
As time has gone on, we've incorporated more things into it. We now have an online program for the Mayo Clinic diet. People can do it online. The journal is a good old-fashioned pencil and paper, and that works for many people. In fact, surprisingly, that was more popular than what we thought. If people track their habits, both in diet and in physical activity, they're more successful at weight management because it stares back at you from the paper. They're aware of what they're doing, what they're putting in their mouth, and they can make adjustments to that.
All right, Dr. Hansrud, we have to move you out of the way because it's starting to smell too darn good.
The chef is here.
Chef Jen Welper is going to be joining us. Come on over, Jen. Welcome to the program. We're happy to have you here.
Thanks.
Great
to be here.
Our first executive chef of the new season.
Yes, absolutely.
Beautiful facility you have here. Do you enjoy helping people cook things that are healthy?
Absolutely. I like to be able to change people's minds. You know, when you think of healthy food, you usually cringe or wrinkle your nose, like, ooh, is it healthy? Mm-hmm. And I want to change that mentality because I can, and it's true. We can eat healthy, and it actually tastes good and look good as well.
When people find out that you're a dietitian here at the Healthy Living Program, what are one of the questions that they ask you?
Well, I have to clarify, I'm not a dietitian.
Okay.
So I don't want to take
you're
any credit.
Chef.
Yep. So I have a culinary background with nutrition.
Okay.
And so a lot of questions I get is like, oh, do you cook a lot of tofu or just a lot of salads? And it's really like, wow, really? Is that all you think of healthy food? And so I really get excited because then I'm like, all right, this is the person that I can change their mind and talk to them about. You know, we make things like really great stir fries that have lots of flavor with chicken. Mm-hmm. We'll use beef and shrimp. We make lots of types of like risotto, like a barley risotto using really nice cheeses. Mm-hmm. But obviously there's lots of vegetables in it too.
Sure.
But really it's talking about using everyday things that they're very familiar with that they can relate to, like, oh, I can have risotto. Oh, you know, it's usually like, really?
I have to say, I'm kind of surprised that when you said risotto, I think of that as being something that's really rich, which looks this myth or matter of fact, is breads, potatoes, and foods high in carbohydrates are the worst things to eat when I'm trying to lose weight. Is that a myth or a fact?
I would definitely go with a myth. Mm-hmm. I think what you really want to look at is the portion,
sure,
you know, and having a balance. You know, yes, I am a Minnesota-grown farm girl, and I love my potatoes, but I also know how much I can eat and how much I should eat. But really looking at when I'm having these grains and these starches, am I incorporating some vegetables in there, or am I able to be satisfied with this portion? So that's really what we want to look at.
Did you have a menu before you started this?
Yeah, I had a menu before I started this. This is something I've been really passionate about for the past probably like 8, maybe going on 10 years. Because the more lives that I can change, I think even though it's the onesies, twosies, it's going to make a bigger, stronger impact. Because then they'll hopefully, you know, spread it on, change it on.
I have the hardest time at 9 o'clock at night. I this is why I go to bed so early, Tom, so that I want to just, I have
so
to stay
eat?
Out of the kitchen because I want to just start eating carbohydrates at 9 o'clock at night. Why is that?
You know, the only thing I could really come up with is that you're just not eating a more balanced or satisfying meal mm-hmm. before then.
I mean,
and the other thing too is kind of changing your mentality that you should be looking forward to eating an apple.
Sure.
Versus a scoop of ice cream. Like
sure.
That scoop of ice cream and that apple should have the same appearance
all
to
right.
you. And it's really kind of changing that mindset.
I'll work on that in 2015.
Yeah.
The
good.
Same appeal? Never. I don't think that'll ever happen.
All right, let's talk appealing. We have to look at the dish that she is making for us. Some of the guys here that came along said, where's the beef? But it's a great looking veggie skewer.
Right. And I think the biggest thing that's so hard is we're like, oh, we're so tired of vegetables, or I don't know how to make them taste good. Sometimes I always ask the question, well, when was the last time you tried it? You know, and usually I get, oh, I was 5. It's like, well, let's try it prepared a little differently. And just by kind of having a little nice marinade on it, it's really going to give you a big, robust, like, wow, the zucchini never tasted so good. And it's really all about seasoning, okay? We don't want to take away flavor and what I call love to your food. So we want to make sure that we give it that seasoning. So these kebabs have like an Italian seasoning marinade with them, a little red wine vinegar, olive oil, and herbs, and they are fabulous. And
easy to do. You said 4 minutes.
Yep, 4 minutes. I assembled it. And what's really great is in the grocery stores nowadays, you can actually get kebab chopped vegetables for you, and it just all you have to do is season it and put them on a skewer and grill them.
That's perfect.
You said herbs. What kind of herbs you got? Can you tell us?
We have oregano and basil, fresh garlic, you know, salt, pepper.
Oh, beautiful.
They are beautiful, colorful, and the recipe is on our webpage. We're going to tweet it out as well.
Perfect.
So people can get it there. How about Super Bowl? Can you eat this for the Super Bowl, Dr. Shives? Can you see it?
With some chips and dip, I think they could. Yeah.
Small steps. Small steps. Thank you so much, Jen.
Thanks so much for letting me be on.
For more information about topics discussed today, visit us on the web at Mayo Clinic News Network, where you can access a podcast of today's show, previously aired programs, and the latest news from Mayo Clinic. Have a question about health and medicine for one of our Mayo Clinic experts? Tweet us anytime at hashtag Mayo Clinic Radio. We'll be answering your questions in upcoming programs. You've been listening to Mayo Clinic Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network. Our senior producer is Rich Dietman. Our social media editor is Audrey Castletine. For Mayo Clinic Radio and Dr. Tom Shives, I'm Tracy McCray. Thanks for listening.
Any medical information conveyed during this program is not intended as a substitute for personal medical advice, and you should not take any action before consulting a healthcare professional. For more information, please go to our website, radio.mayoclinic.org. Please join us each week on this station for more of the medical information you want from Mayo Clinic specialists who know.